Duquesne simply folded his hands in front of him on the table and waited patiently. He remained wary of the Grand Inquisitor's power and increasingly irascible temper, but he no longer feared Clinton, which was probably at least a little unreasonable of him, given what Clinton had already done to Eric Dennis. And, he realized as he sat waiting, the fact that he was no longer afraid of the Grand Inquisitor quite probably explained Clinton's increasing impatience with him. Jaspar Clinton didn't like the thought of not being feared.
"There's something I need to consider more deeply in that," the church's treasurer thought. "It says something about him, but it says something about me, too."
"At any rate, we're all here now," Trenaire continued. "And since you were the one who requested this meeting, Jaspar, why don't you go ahead and tell us why?"
"Two things, really," Clinton replied.
The Grand Inquisitor's irritation remained evident, but he straightened in his chair, and some of the petulance faded from his expression.
"One is a message from Bishop Executor Willis, and the other is a message from Father Stiven in Delphirac."
"Father Stiven?" Elaine Maguire repeated the name, then grimaced. "Which Father Stiven, Jaspar?"
"He's Bishop Ernest's intendant in Ferraid,"
Clinton said, and Duquesne's weren't the only eyebrows which rose in surprise.
"And what exactly makes this message from Father Stiven, was it?"
Trenaire looked at Clinton, who bobbed his head in a curt nod.
"Well, what makes this message from him so important?"
"I'll get to that in a moment."
Clinton waved his right hand as if he were pushing something aside on the table in front of him.
"It's important, but I think we need to look at the Bishop Executor's message first."
Trenaire nodded, and Duquesne braced himself. He had no illusions about any message Willis Grayson might have sent. Given the tenor of the Emeraldian Bishop Executor's recent correspondence, it was obvious Emerald's military position was about as close to hopeless as mere mortals could expect to come. And Grayson's more recent analyses of Prince Narman's options and inclinations hadn't exactly provided cheerful bedtime reading.
"Well, it isn't official yet, or at least it wasn't when Grayson composed his message, but there's not much question that Narman's turning his coat,"
Clinton growled. All of his listeners sat up in their chairs, eyes narrowing, and he shrugged heavy shoulders.
"I know Grayson's been telling us for months that Emerald wouldn't be able to hold out long once Caleb put his troops ashore, but I don't think even he saw this coming."
"How good is his information?" Maguire asked.
"That's always the question, isn't it?"
Clinton showed his teeth in a tight grin.
"Apparently neither he nor his intendant could confirm or deny the rumors swirling around Erastor, but they were able to confirm that Pine Hollow's been sent off somewhere, and most of the rumors agree that there's only one logical place for Narman to be sending him. And now, apparently, Narman himself has sailed off somewhere as well. Would any of you care to place a small wager on what his destination might have been?"
Duquesne's face tightened in dismay. As Clinton said, there'd been little doubt the Carizians could conquer Emerald any time they got around to it. But having Emerald conquered, bad as it might have been, was a very different prospect from having Emerald voluntarily align itself with the House of Armagh's defiance of Mother Church's authority.